It's time to follow what feels right in Fort Myers, like making time for each other in tropical settings, kidding around on white sand beaches, surrounded by nature. It just feels right to relax and reconnect with the ones you love in Fort Myers. Book a direct flight to Southwest Florida International Airport and plan your trip to our islands, beaches, and neighborhoods at visitfortmyers.com.
At Firestone Complete Auto Care, we hold our service to the highest standard. That's why we have thousands of ASE-certified expert technicians nationally. So if you're looking for car service that's got your back on the road, choose the place that treats every car like their own and every customer like family. Don't wait any longer. Call your local Firestone Complete Auto Care and book your next appointment today.
Moncrief on News Talk.
It's been 2 years.
I know.
You did everything that the doctor said, and you took all of the drugs, and
it's not fair.
Still...
I don't want to die just when I'm getting used to my new boobs.
No, you're not going to die.
I am, actually. It metastasized to my bones. It's incurable.
Can you just give me one thing? I'm so sorry.
Hey.
I'm sorry.
Babe, it's okay. It's okay.
No, I feel like it's just going to get a little bit bigger.
That's Dying for Sex. You can stream all episodes now on Disney+. James Dempsey joins us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon.
So she has, obviously, she's developed breast cancer, which is kind of serious. This is the main character. But then she kind of leaves the husband, the poor husband. How do they arrange that to keep sympathy with her?
So it's not just breast cancer. It's that she has been a survivor of breast cancer in remission and is now been diagnosed with terminal cancer.
Yeah.
And having led an unhappy marriage with a husband who was not interested in her physically, she decides, you know what, I'm going to spend my last few times, notches on the bedpost, shall we say, exploring my sexuality and my identity and what that means.
Okay.
And I did think he was a little bit hard done by.
Yes. Right?
But like, for the sake of the plot, he's played by one of the Duplass brothers. He quickly exits the screen. But this is based on a true story, actually, right? So it comes from this version we're getting is from Elizabeth Merriweather, whose biggest hits would be New Girl, the Zooey Deschanel sitcom, and then The Dropout, the Theranos, I can't remember her name, you know, the
oh, yeah, yeah,
that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so it was adapted from a very successful podcast during the pandemic by this woman named Nikki Boyer. And Jenny Slate, who we also heard in the clip there, she plays the version of Nikki. And obviously it's Michelle Williams, the not Destiny's Child one, as Molly, right?
Yeah.
And into it comes this incredibly funny interplay. And this is a really kind of bizarre show to try and sell because it's like a kinky, lusty, sex-positive show about dying.
Right? Yes.
My favourite. Right?
Yeah.
Like, just what you want to sit down to and watch at the weekend. And basically, it's just a very odd mismatch, but it somehow seems to work, right? So you have Michelle Williams as Molly. Now, Michelle Williams, I mean, it's kind of funny to think of, like, you know, of I guess probably Dawson's Creek might be 30 years old at this point, right? But like that she would be arguably the biggest breakout credible star from that.
Mm.
She's gone on to a couple of Oscar nominations and Emmy nominations. And, you know, I could see her in contention for this as well with her very stylish pixie cut and absolutely game for it, gamey approach towards this. Because it is very, very, very sexy. And I mean that in the sense of like, this is not one to sit down and watch, you know, with your mother sitting beside you, right? And beside her then is Jenny Slate, who like is this stand-up comedian who has become, you know, Judy Greer. She was like the kind of friend of the like, not, you know, 90s and 2000s. And I kind of think Jenny Slate has slid into that role because now she's like the friend. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But here she gets to do more than just be the friend because they're playing this kind of vice versa thing, right? As in that she was this free-spirited one who, you know, was always going off and having romantic dalliances and enjoying herself while Molly was the more straight-laced one. And now that Molly has to face her, you know, death. She wants to try a little bit of living on the wild side. Meanwhile, she's left her husband, who was her support system, and then she needs still that support to navigate her way through a terminal cancer diagnosis. And therefore, she relies on Nikki to fulfill that role. So Nikki has to learn to be the more responsible one.
Okay.
Now, if that sounds like trite and like a movie, yeah, that's what we would have got, like with Julia Roberts and like someone in the 90s.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's not what we get here. Instead, it is very funny, very fresh, very interesting, and just like nothing I've ever seen before. And I have to admit, I absolutely lapped it up. And it is a rare instance where, God, I would have taken longer episodes than the 30 minutes that they
have. Oh, my word. And so, like, even given that, you know, she's exploring her sexuality, is it this week, Bob, I'm going to be tied up kind of thing?
I will say it's a little bit like that, right? Like, it's a little bit like, let's spin the wheel of fetish fortune and see what we land upon. Now, not quite. Like, there's a recurring part played by Rob Delaney, who is credited only as neighbor guy, who plays her kind of schlubby neighbor with whom she begins this vaguely sadomasochistic relationship while arguing over, you know, messy food eating in the lift. But yeah, so like, it's a little bit like, let's explore this one little kink this weekend. Let's, you know, let's explore next week something else. But all in, that's being played against the, you know, the reality of this woman's health deteriorating and her facing that head first while being supported by her friend, who equally has to face seeing her absolute best friend dying at the same time. So
okay,
it definitely is exploring the emotional heavyweight aspects of this as much as the kinky bits. But like, I suppose you'd have to ask each individual kinkster how accurately and well portrayed it is. And I'm not willing to go on the air.
I suppose really the story arc is about her facing immortality and getting closer and closer to it, right?
Yeah,
than necessarily the sex part.
And yet it's very funny at the same time.
Okay, all right. Now, this is an incredibly crass question, but there won't be a second series of this, I take.
I assume not. I assume that this is like a one and done kind of thing, because as it is based on a true story, the real Molly did pass away from her cancer diagnosis. So I assume this is going to be a one and done kind of thing. But it's a very like odd little thing. I mean, the title, I think, doesn't do it a great job for selling it, because you might just sort of think, I'm not sure about this. But yeah, definitely worth seeking out.
Yeah. Okay, right. Our second show is Million Dollar Secret. It's streaming now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
In each of your rooms right now, there is a box. And in one of those boxes, there is $1 million.
Yeah, got my attention.
Go on.
Whoever finds $1 million in their room gets to keep it. But only if they can hide in plain sight until the end of their stay.
Oh.
Keep your secret?
Right, so... So you have a group of you living together. One of them has a big secret. That's a completely... no one's done this before, James.
So I would say this is the traitorsification of kind of reality competition TV shows.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you have to look at the kind of state of reality competition shows on... You know, they were like this staple in the early noughties. And then when the streaming wars came along, they sort of went down the route of romance and, you know, sex. Right. And that's what they went with. And they have sort of fallen back, and it's not that the BBC championed the traitors. They didn't develop it. They didn't do it. You know, it's a Dutch original show, but I think they helped launch it to the English speaking market, let's say, in a way that it hadn't previously been. And now it's gone gangbusters, and you know, we're getting an Irish one eventually this year. And Netflix probably looking at that, thinking, how can we basically copy exactly the same thing? And that's what they've done.
Allegedly.
So, it, you know, basically the gameplay is that 12 people arrive in this lodge called The Stag, which is in, I think, British Columbia. And there are a bunch of Americans, and they are all in different hotel rooms. And in each hotel room is a box, which they open with a very, very dramatic flourish and a key to reveal either nothing, Deal or No Deal style, or $1 million in cash.
Nice.
Now, I would have thought $1 million in cash would have looked, you know, larger than the pile of cash in their box.
Really? Maybe
whatever.
It's just like, yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then...
That'll be worth nothing in 3 weeks' time.
Well, true. Right?
If all this continues.
I'm getting it back across the border. But basically, the person who discovers $1 million in their box then must not get caught out by everyone else. So everyone else is trying to weed out who is the millionaire, while the millionaire is trying to avoid, you know, being caught. And in order to do so, has to carry out numerous tasks that are called, I think, special agendas or secret agendas, which will help, you know, help deflect suspicion from them, or, you know, push suspicion towards some other hapless person. Now, all in, like, this is the traitor's light. So, like, if you really love the traitors, you'll enjoy this because, you know, it involves people sitting around a table and all accusing each other with absolutely no certainty, but hunches that inevitably get proven wrong. Perhaps where it lacks some of the fun of the traitors is that what works very well in the traitors is there is usually three traitors, so there's a bit of drama about whether they will start stabbing each other in the back as well, right? So here we know everything, we hold all the cards as a viewer, so we're just watching to see if the millionaire will get caught out. And for me, the gameplay just was a little kind of basic compared to the traitors, which is still quite basic at the, you know, ultimately, but more enjoyable. What I did like was Peter Serafinowicz, the British kind of comedy actor who's been in a million things, none of which immediately come to mind, except for like Shaun of the Dead. He's in that kind of milieu. And he plays, let's say, Alan Cumming, right? His finest role to date. So, and when thinking about this, like, it's kind of funny that I always think it's so funny that people think Claudia Winkleman is this absolutely fantastic presenter of the Traitors. I have no problem with her, but I don't think she necessarily adds anything to the show at all, beyond her very iconic fringe, right? Whereas Alan Cumming really camped it up in the American version and has become, you know, his star has really risen in America because of that, because he does these incredibly camp Scottish line readings of silly dialogue, right? And Peter Serafinowicz is aping that style more so. So he's playing this kind of posh, benevolent hotel manager in the show who is like calling out over an intercom, you know, the guests to come and do these silly missions and stuffing his face while they're at the round table and they're, you know, the camera is panning to him and watching him doing all these kind of bumbling silly things. Now, it's very funny, but like, will this catapult him to superstardom in the US? I don't think so. However, as like viewers here, it adds an extra dynamic of something to it.
Okay, sounds like it needs, and the things they get them to do, are they any use in Mary, you have to wear a gold hat for the day and see, do people suspect anything?
Like, you know, one thing that, you know, the millionaire had to do one day was that it was, you know, within the whatever, I don't know, hour and a half, 2 hours of breakfast time they had allotted for filming this breakfast scene, the millionaire had to use something like 7 different song titles, but they were things like, you know, Don't Stop Believing and Every Rose Has Its Thorn, and had to work these into conversation without mentioning that they were songs.
Okay.
Right? And successfully did this and then is able to, you know, earn this kind of extra protection. But then later on, you know, the producers are telling the other contestants who've also then won their own kind of leg up in the competition, oh, look out for the person who was using language that might have been a smash hit, quote unquote, or like wink, you know, and you're like, the producers here are really pulling the strings in a very obvious way.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Our final show today is The Bondsman. You can stream all of season 1 now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
Not the church going type.
But your friend tonight was, though. Wasn't he? Look what good that did him. Anyway, we don't exactly discriminate. The last gal doing your job wasn't even Christian.
What job, lady?
Oh, you're still a bounty hunter, Mr. Halloran. But now, you hunt demons.
Right, so this is Kevin Bacon. Hope Halloran? Yeah. Is it?
Like, the thing I was most surprised by this was that it wasn't a pre-existing IP.
You know,
this was a completely original production.
Give it credit for that, at least.
Well, made by a guy who honestly looks like his names are in the wrong order. His name is Granger David. And to give him his credit, had a very, very successful short film at the Cannes Film Festival a few years ago. So that is kind of how he cut his teeth. And this is not up to that caliber, shall we say, right? So Kevin Bacon plays Hub Halloran. He is a bondsman, which is kind of like a legal bounty hunter.
Yeah.
You are breaking your bond after you get out of jail, or county jail. I don't quite know what it is. But he's down south, deep south, with a big southern drawl thrown in for good measure. And in the opening episode, in the opening 5 minutes, we see him absolutely butchered to death in a sort of an attempt to catch someone gone wrong, only for his dead body to reawaken several hours later and for his very severe and very graphic neck wounds to then heal themselves. And he finds himself back in this mortal world, but having been sent back by the devil from his very brief stint in hell, because he's now going to be a demonic bounty hunter back on Earth. So he is told by the devil, you have to keep catching the demons in your local area, who have all escaped from hell and found their way into various bodies, be they nubile teenage girls in cheerleader outfits or priests with exploding eyes, etc. Now, all in, the big budget, and it's actually not that big because this comes from Blumhouse Productions, that B schlock movie production company. The budget has all been spent on the special effects, which are that kind of splatter gory stuff, which can be very, very funny when it is sort of paired with a really whip smart, clever or ironic script. And this is not like I never watched it, but there was that show Supernatural, which ran for like 16 seasons. And it was just these two guys going around and fighting a demon of the week. And literally, that is exactly what you're getting here. You have Kevin Bacon looking for a new demon of the week, but the demons aren't interesting or novel. They don't really move the plot along. There's nothing special about them except they kind of scream and go oogie boogie, like stuff like that.
Yeah. Right?
Now, it's an odd show because it's incredibly old-fashioned for that. And the thing I was most struck by is they've cast Beth Grant, who is this very well-known, very completely recognisable character actress. You'll know her from everything from Speed to the iconic line she has in Donnie Darko, which is, I doubt your commitment to sparkle motion. It's like really famous. And she is playing, my jaw nearly dropped the floor, hit the floor. She's playing his grandmother, despite the fact that she is 11 years older than
him. That's flattering Kevin Bacon a bit.
Now, so I read some criticism of this that like Kevin Bacon has a band with his brother.
He does, yeah.
Bacon Brothers. Yeah. And in this, he plays Hub, who was estranged from Marianne, who played by Jennifer Nettles, who is a country and western singer in their local band and local town, and they had toured together. And does that mean that at some point he gets behind the microphone and belts out and croons his way through a country and western number? You better believe it does. Would I rather be in hell than listen to that again? Yes, I would.
It's Monster of the Week and Song of the Week?
Not quite Song of the Week, but certainly Monster of the Week and very, very occasional Song of the Week, but that's more than enough.
Right, so those three shows are Dying for Sex. You can stream all episodes now on Disney+, Million Dollar Secret streaming now on Netflix, and The Bondsman. You can stream all of season one now on Netflix. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
At Firestone Complete Auto Care, we hold our service to the highest standard. That's why we have thousands of ASE-certified technicians nationally. So don't wait any longer. Give us a call and book your next appointment today.